you know, when we're virgins and we are exploring with partner, and it's like, I remember those times still being so much fun, you know. And I know there was like, you know, dry humping and stuff, and that was just quite funny, right? But there was all this other, like,
can we bring dry humping back into our lives, please?
Listen, I'm happy for dry humping. I'm all for it. And it's like, you know, it's like, but the thing is, like, there's also this bit of like exploration, because it's like there was a lot more touch, there was a lot more light touch or stronger touch. It was like exploration, and you got to find out, and I'm still finding out. Like, a lot of time, I feel I'm very inexperienced, even though I talk about sex a lot, which is probably why, because I feel like there's so much to learn. Welcome back. We are on today with my guest, Goddess Carol, on the Tool for Dish It podcast. I'm your host, Angie. You can come and find me at angies.com. That's angie-s.com, or on my Linktree link, which is linktree.com/Tool for Dish It. Both links are in the show notes, just like every week. Listen, that's the place you can go if you want to be part of my community, if you want me to show you how to create your own podcast and get involved with what I do. I'd love to see you there. So if you like the show, please give it a 5-star rating and review, and be sure to tell your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you are listening to right now. The more you do that, the more it helps new listeners discover this show. I am so excited to introduce to you our new guest of this week, Goddess Carol. It was an absolutely pleasure. It was so much fun talking with her. I felt it was so nurturing. There was like a really nice vibe, and we went into types of conversation that I actually find hard to actually find guests to be able to talk about those things. So we touched on different things, from what is amazing, good, soulful sex, to, you know, how we decolonize the way that we love others. And we talked about relationship anarchy, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, also about, we went into a bit of sci-fi talk and the meaning of life and how we see life and, you know, what is the answer? Is there any answer? What our take on it is. I mean, it went into beautiful directions and I really, really enjoyed it. And so without further ado, please help me give a very warm welcome to Goddess Carol. Let's begin. Welcome, Goddess.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
I'm really interested to see where our conversation will take us. I know the premise is for us to talk about soulful sex and love, but, you know, let's see where and how our conversation develops. I feel like I'm going to be learning quite a few bits. And I know, like, from our email exchange, I was telling you there was quite a few things in terms. I was like, you know, I was like, I gotta be honest, I'm not sure what you're talking. I'm not sure, like, I'm really interested, but I'm not 100% like, I, you know. So I feel like, to me, like, as long as we can always have open conversations and try to understand, you know, where everyone is coming from, I'm happy to have any conversations under the sun. So I'm really excited for this. And before we dive in, Goddess, please introduce yourself, where you live and what you do.
Yes. So my name is Goddess. I use he, she, they pronouns. And I'm the proud Mosunzi community. We are practice in collective healing, which I can tell you about later. I'm currently located in Iowa in the U.S.
Okay, that's great. And I love the birds behind you. It adds a bit of a sunshine to it. I really love it.
Yeah, they're very talkative over here.
Well, that's good. And could you explain, because I know you said, like, you're the proud Momo of Sunseed Community. Can you explain what Sunseed Community is, what it does, or its mission?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I say we're a practice in collective healing, that means that we're really trying to form a community in which we are actively practicing decolonizing our minds and our bodies, And while doing that, healing from the ancestral trauma, generational trauma, trauma that we've had in our own history, and coming back into our bodies. So I practice body and energy work. I do massage. I also hold workshops and consults for, I hate this terminology, but diversity, equity, and inclusion. So how are we unpacking our anti-blackness? How are we unpacking whiteness? So that's what the Unseen Community is. It's a fun war ride.
Okay. So I've got a few questions just based on what you just said.
Yeah.
I'll start with the last one. Why do you hate the terms? There was three terms that you mentioned. It was what was it? It was a decolonizing and
There's decolonization, which I love that term.
Okay. Good.
Diversity, equity, inclusion, I am really uncomfortable with using because it stems from the fact that we need to, especially in white spaces, which are the mainstream spaces, there needs to be a reason to be like, oh, I'm here, and also all these other people with different experiences than me are here. So I need diversity, equity, inclusion to be aware. It's nothing to be ashamed of. That's a practice that is good to like start to flex the muscle of, but to have diversity, equity, inclusion training, I just don't like that terminology. It's like that kind of like, oh, and you. You're also welcome. Yeah. The system.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't work for us either.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because that's actually how I feel. It in terms of like because I feel like it's maybe coming from a different point of view, you know. But like I feel to me it's like there's two things. One, it's sad that we even need to have to mention it. And two, it's like sometimes I feel like when it's when the terms is like solidifying that way, it feels like it feels like it's not necessarily genuine, and it feels like it's it's almost like there's a smugness behind it, you know, where people say we have diversity, equity, like it's very HR, very human resources,
right?
Right. It's like there's a lot of things I don't tell about myself because I'm like, I don't want to see that like social worker smile expression on people. I'm like, don't give me that. I'm like, do you know what I mean? It's that feeling of welcome. It's almost like they almost like talk down. Do you know what I mean? It's like, when I see it done to other people, it just makes me so angry. And so it pisses me off. I'm like, that's a person. That's it. Like, can we just, why do we have to? And it, you know, look, what I'm saying may be very, some people may not like that at all. I don't know how it comes across, but how does that sound like for you? Like, does that make sense to you?
It does. And I agree with you. It does feel like very, like it's the popular thing of today to, you know, make sure that your company or your organization has diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's like, okay, well, what does that actually mean? Like, does that mean that you hired someone, like, and also did you hire a white person to come and do like a 1-hour course on how to, you know, welcome in your BIPOC or a queer, like, community into the space? Like, that is, that's not what we're really trying to do. Like, for me, it's really about dismantling the system itself and really looking at the system, because it also affects like default bodies and default ways of existing, which I mean, you know, skinny white people who are you know, able-bodied, quote unquote. Like, it also, like, the system also affects them in very negative ways. And it's harder to see because it's been taught that it's actually a benefit when it's not. So how are we really dismantling it at its core so that we're building a new something completely different that at its foundation already has in it processes and ways of being that, like, look and see people for all they are.
Mm-hmm.
that they have adaptability within that system so that it works for different kinds of bodies, different kinds of people, different kinds of lived experiences. That's what I'm about. Not putting a placard on somebody's organization saying,
I know.
Oh, we're ready for Black people.
Yeah, we're BIPOC friendly. And, yes. You know, it's weird because it almost feels like that's even more putting an emphasis on the difference instead of the similarity, or not similarity, but in terms of like equality.
Yeah, the human, like you said, the humanness of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because with diversity, equity, inclusion, there's this very much distinct us and them, you know?
Right, right.
And yeah, it's icky. I don't really like it.
No, but this is good because it's funny because it's something that it's always a kind of like a topic I try and like stay away from when it gets so, because it can get very, I don't feel like I'm in a position to really know enough about it. But it's like, there is those things that I see and I observe and I'm like, I feel like if this was, you know, like you were saying, you know, is it like a white person who did like a 1 hour training, right? It's a bit like, I feel like it's a bit, to me, it's like if someone didn't understand, you know, it would be like if someone who's not Algerian or half Algerian like me and come and tell me why I should be offended or how I would feel included, and they don't, you know, and let's say they're Spanish or Russian. I mean, they have no idea what they're talking about, and I don't like my feelings to be owned by someone. Like, I'll tell you. I don't have to be told when I should be upset and offended, because most of the time I'm not. I got a question for you. You know, you said something, you know, with the, for example, like the skinny white body and like the impact it has, you know, what was it that you meant by that? Is it like, you mean like the pressure on that kind of body type, or like the shame that now people may feel by being skinny and white, or what is it that you meant?
I have to like rethink about that question. Okay. So you were asking how it affects, like, okay, default bodies. Okay, so in Sonia Renee Taylor's book, Your Body is Not an Apology, or The Body is Not an Apology, she talks about default bodies. And default bodies are basically, like, how Western society deems, like, what Western society deems a status quo. So it's usually a white person, usually a white man. Very slim, able-bodied, you know, the six-pack abs, all of that, and usually it's cis, right? So it's either a man or a woman. You don't really see anything in between there. So that's really limiting and really narrow, because think about how many of us in the population just don't fit that. Even as white people, we just don't fit that. Mm-hmm. So if we are thinking and dreaming and acting in our world with this idea of that being the default body, then when we look in the mirror, when we look at our lover, which we'll get into, when we look at those around us, we are always comparing ourselves to this default body that doesn't represent or fit us.
Mm-hmm.
So that just compounds, like it compounds the shame, compounds the debilitating, or like the beliefs that really limit our possibilities of loving ourselves.
Absolutely. And I think also, you know, and then we'll move on to the, you know, a different question, but. So I'm just interrupting the episode here to clarify what you're about to hear me say. So I noticed after the fact that I'm not expressing my thought clearly, partly to not pronouncing certain words fully. So in short, the next bit you will hear me say, all I was trying to say was that we need to be careful not to reverse shame white skinny bodies, also known as default bodies. Because none of us choose how we're born, and we cannot tie a whole group with the same brush. So I was just referring to, you know, you know, it's so important to be aware and all of the things that are happening in the moment, but also not to fall into the trap of reverse shaming, which, you know, is what we are discussing here. And now we're going back into the episode. Like, there's that bit also that I'm thinking of now is that, you know, if that is somebody's natural body, you know, to be like skinny, and they happen to be white, right? If that's their natural body, they should also now be feeling like ashamed or that they were part of it in terms of, you know, someone is born today or 30 years ago. It's the same thing. Like, it's not their fault, you know, like, right? So it's like, there's like that thing, almost like this subtlety, that it's like being careful not to now doing reverse shaming, right? Or reverse guilt or reverse all that kind of stuff. It's like, it really is about like realizing that, like you're saying, that we're all humans, right? We all, like, what's the humanity of you? You know, not putting ourselves in a box, but being accountable for our actions and our words, not hiding behind other people or a group or being blamed for something we haven't done. Is like, it's basically down to the individual, because we have so much of an impact as a person. We can do a lot of change alone, but we have to be accountable, and we have to also have the chance to show who we are as a human, not just being part of like a box to tick. I don't know if I'm making a lot of sense, but is this making sense?
Yes, I think I do hear what you're saying, because it's easy to go from one extreme to the other, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And like kind of have this like black and white, like hard edge point of view. And what that like decolonizing, kind of like divesting in default bodies, it's not to shame people who have a slimmer build or maybe look like the models you see in magazines, in terms of like their body shape. It's to look at yourself and realize that there isn't a goal to get to. You are the goal. And what feels good in your body, what feels like how is your body feeling, rather than like, how just does it present to the world, in terms of how close can I get to this target? Because even if you have the shape of the target, like there's probably a whole bunch of other things that people could list off, well, you don't have this, you don't have this, you don't have this, that also fit into that default body. Mm-hmm. So you're not a checkbox of things that make you valid and worthy to exist on this earth.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, like when we are going to talk about soulful sex, you know, a bit later on, is that, you know, it, you know, the body who loves him, like who loves itself the most and is confident, doesn't care about walking around naked in daylight in front of its partner. It's like, that's usually the one that's usually the best. The best experience, you know what I mean? It's like, and it's like, because there's nothing that stops more of a flow than it's like, oh, you know, don't look at my stretch marks, don't look at my this, or my boobs are hanging, or my belly is big. You know what I mean? It's like it's something that I used to feel like a lot of complex about my body, but I am so happy that I'm just like, listen, this is me. There's nothing you can say that's going to make me feel bad, right? So, and it's a lot more fun, you know, both for yourself and for your partner. And I think that is so important, not to put ourselves in box as well and not listen to other people's opinion or the magazine, the glossy magazine or the Instagram, because that's not real life. And it's not their business, and it shouldn't be our business what they think about us sometimes, you know, like, oh, it's too much otherwise.
Mm-hmm. It really amazes me that. It doesn't amaze me. I think I'm a little bit saddened when I see still, like, at 28 years old, the same catchphrases, like, how to catch a man, or, like, five things you should do to be an attractive woman, or, you know what I mean? Like, that is still, like, plastered on, like, magazines when you go to the grocery store, and even on YouTube channels, I'm like, YouTube, you know me, why are you even advertising?
Oh, I know. I get the same. I'm like, there's this advert that keeps coming back. I'm like, when is that guy going away? Like, I'm not going to listen to him. Like, skip ads.
Yes, exactly. I'm like, how do I change my settings? What do I need to do to tell you more about me? Technology. I think that there's things to unpack there, because there's a reason why those things are still being bought at the grocery store.
Isn't it? Like, I think it's something like to be, I feel like it's a way to control, because I used to be very insecure and jealous of other women because I was insecure. I was like, I didn't think that I had enough to be, you know, just to be me. And it wasn't until I didn't used to be, that's funny. I only sort of started getting jealous when, you know, in my 20s after a few disappointments in relationships. But I wasn't that naturally like this. But I think the reason why I'm bringing this up is that, you know, you were saying about all those things that are plastered in a magazine and social media, the 5 things to be attractive, the this you have to do, how to get your dream bikini body every year. And it's like, you know, when I experienced, you know, it was through doing belly dancing, part of like this tantric yoga school I was in. This is years and years ago, over 10 years ago. And we had to do this exercise where we were just a group of women. It was just like a group of women. And we had to dance. We were in a circle. There was an inner circle and an outer circle. The outer circle would be dancing for the inner circle. And, you know, every 30 seconds, they'll change, they'll move around. So you'd watch every single woman in the group dance for you. And it was... And that whole experience, that whole week of doing dancing together and doing all kinds of other exercises, we do all kinds of like spiritual stuff, but and rituals, I was just like, oh my God, I have nothing to be insecure, jealous about, because I realized through those experiences that every woman, and that would be for every man too, because we do the same with men, every human being, you know, apart from a few, there's some exceptions, obviously, but every human being is beautiful, absolutely beautiful, which means that I am beautiful, which means that what I have, because when you sit and watch a woman dance for you, there's something it's very humbling, and also very, it's like, oh my God, it's like, it's this power coming up, you know, I don't even have the words anymore because it was so long ago, but I remember that was the moment it clicked for me. That was just like, oh my God, my insecurities are bullshit. And they're always, so those magazines and those 5 ways to be a perfect woman, bikini body or perfect man, 6 abs, 12 abs or whatever. It's a way to almost maybe control and keep us down, because when we are free, when we feel good, when we feel in flow, we're not gonna fall prey to all the stuff they're trying to tell us in the news and the social media. We're not going to be spending all that money on all these products, and we're not going to go and, you know, doing all these things that make us so unhappy. And then what, we're going to get medicated? It could be like a much longer conversation, but that's maybe, I don't know. I feel like maybe some of it is that it's dimming down everybody's light and changing everybody's taste to something that isn't really real.
Absolutely. I think that was beautifully said. The idea of, like, first of all, that if all these bodies are beautiful, then I'm beautiful. That's that's the shit right there. I love it. And then also the dimming down of light, because I think it's time that we really question, like, if you are a child and you are trying to celebrate who you are in celebration of who you are, you're exploring who you are, and someone tells you that that's not okay, then I think that that person, like that idea needs to be looked at, and not the child. And it goes when we're adult too. If we are in celebration of ourselves, and I'm not talking about like bypassing the work that we need to do to you know, unpack our biases, that's not what I'm talking about. Like, yes, we do need to be called in with that. However, if we are celebrating our bodies, if we feel like, if we feel attractive today, if we feel vibrant, if we feel well, if we feel, you know, expansive today, and there's someone or something in our energy or like in our environment that is telling us that that should not be who we are, then it's not us. That's that other things to carry. Like, what is mine and what is yours to carry? You are trying to reflect something onto me that is not my responsibility to hold.
Absolutely. You know, there's this saying, and I wish I could remember who said this, but this may summarize that as well. There's a saying that goes, how you treat me is your path. How I react is mine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Right? So they can call me stupid, mental, whatever they want. But effectively, I'm like, well, okay, I don't always react well to that. I actually flipped on someone last week, which I'm not proud of. But anyway, so, but at the same time, I'm not ashamed. So go figure. But it's like, but the thing is that that had nothing to do with me, and I knew it. I almost could recognize that voice, and that's actually why I reacted so strongly. So I had to work on that. But it's like that was on them. You know, it came out of the blue, out of nowhere. It was not justified. But the thing is it really is that, is discerning what people are saying versus actually what are your reality. And one of the things that you mentioned, you said bypassing, and I just want to touch on that because I don't know how maybe people have different definitions to that. So, because when I hear, you know, it's not about bypassing, dismantling our beliefs, just bypassing it. The way I understand is like, if someone bypasses, like a bit like with the whole diversity, equity and inclusion, you know, it's not about knowing what the right terms to say, but it's actually embodying, understanding why. Like the same thing with like the dancing example I was giving about, if you're beautiful, I am beautiful. Had I read that in a book and just gone and just say it in my mind as an affirmation, it wouldn't have worked the same way because I didn't experience it on the cellular level. Whereas, you know, is that, that's why I feel like, you know, if you're bypassing, it's like, yeah, I'm just repeating it in my mind. Yeah. You know, or this is the term I should be using, but not understanding it deeply as to why, like you haven't been touched by it. And I think once you're touched by it, you are changed and you haven't bypassed it. Is that what you would say?
Yeah, I would say that that's definitely a part of bypassing, or the idea of like ignoring it through like all encompassing, like homogenization. So like when we're like, we're all one people, or like we're all one race.
I don't see color.
Yes, exactly.
We know what they mean. I know what they mean. They don't mean it badly, but it's like it's just a catchphrase, right?
Yeah, it's a catchphrase, and it's such an erasure of what's actually happening in our world. So in terms of that type of bypassing, when people are choosing to not address their own biases because they believe that it's all one love, they can just love through it all, that's not actually practicing love. Mm. And that's not actually, you know, solving the problem. That's just putting a band-aid over it without really starting to heal that wound, like tend to the wound.
And it may feel a bit like it's also being gaslighted a little bit. It's
absolutely.
Right? Yeah, it's like saying, well, I've said sorry. Mm-hmm. Let's move it along. It's like, oh, I'll tell you when I've moved on.
Yeah.
You know, like if someone hurts you or if someone cheats on you, for example, just to take like a really, I guess, like a non-inflammatory topic people go, they can listen to that. But it's like, if I cheated on you, for example, and you're upset and I'm like, well, I've apologized. Let's move it along. Let's move on. I'm like, no. Like, I get it. You shouldn't be like, keep bringing it up maybe, but it's like, you need to heal and I need to actually apologize and realize I've hurt you, I betrayed you. And then, you know, so we need like look at that and then eventually we can move on and do better. But it's it feels gaslighting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so in terms of, you know, like, I know, like, part of your work is, I know you say, like, you do, like, massages and you know, you heal and, you know, to sort of, like, de-trauma, like, I guess to, you said, like, to decolonize the mind and the body and looking at trauma that sort of, like, is in almost, like, inherited or that, you know, that happens in our current lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to ask you a question around this, because if trauma is passed on generation to generation, do you know why trauma persists? I mean, what is it that, is it like the soul that carries it through? Is it like DNA? Like how, like what does that mean? Like having ancestral trauma? Mm-hmm. Or like, because let's say if you were born and you were not aware of anything that's going on and you were living in a bubble, right? And you didn't know about who your ancestors are or anything like that. Would that trauma still be there? Is that what we mean by trauma keep, you know, is inherited?
So this is such a delicious question. And I, as I'm hearing you talk about it, I think I notice a differentiation in my mind and body of generational trauma versus ancestral trauma. Mm-hmm. So for me, generational trauma is more about like societal based. So like with generational trauma, I associate it with how I, in my own experience, was trained as a Black person to navigate through whiteness, whether I needed to, you know, try to make myself smaller in certain situations or bigger in certain situations, how I needed to apologize for being a person who carries a vagina, things of that nature. That feels like generational trauma. So how my family, the people who raised me, were taught by the people who raised them, and ergo taught me how to hold the histories.
It's like nurture versus nature, like it's the conditioning. Exactly. Yeah, so generational is like the nurture, society, your family, your friends, how you perceive, how you interpret everything, mm-hmm. how you experience everything.
But when I think of ancestral trauma, I think about my own spiritual practice and how in my practice and my beliefs, my ancestors are living through me simultaneously. So my great-great-grandmother, I have lived and existed in her time with her as her, and she has lived and existed and is currently existing through me. Like, time is not, and I could go in this, like, whole thing, and I won't. But what I think about there is how the soul has come into this body. My soul has come into this body and now holds the memories of what made this body, and that's my ancestors. So when I think about ancestral trauma, I'm thinking about like the healing and tending of deep energetic ties to beliefs that then become energies that just do not serve me anymore and are actually holding me back from fully catching my blessings. So I'm a witchy bitch. I'm gonna say that right now. So
that's all right.
And generational trauma, I feel like that's like active magical, like that's like a spell that we are reenacting every time we tell someone how to operate from a place of fear in order to exist in the world. And with ancestral like trauma, like that is like that energy, that energetic field that we are feeding into and feeding into and feeding into, and is creating this like the primordial soup for existing in this pain and sorrow that we don't need to exist in. So I'm going to unpack that more after this. So thank you for that. That was a really juicy question.
No, that's funny, but I do hear that, and I feel like, you know, maybe like that ancestral, I guess ancestral soul DNA, or, you know, I wonder if that sometimes those blocks that we cannot, or we feel that we cannot transcend. And also maybe I wonder if, like, you know, that thing like you were saying about our ancestors, is that I wonder if, like, maybe that's why some of us feel this strong affinity to sci-fi. I mean, what you were saying about your great-great-great-grandmother, like, I was thinking about, you know, you were living there with her and she's living here with you. I was thinking about that TV series, The 100. Have you seen it?
No, but I've heard of it. And yes, we can definitely go on the sci-fi route.
Oh my God, that is, like, it's so good. Honestly, I highly recommend it. Like, you have to just go past the first 2-3 episodes, because, like, the acting is a little bit, and then it just picks up really nicely. And it's like, I'm not even going to say what it's about, because, like, the way it develops is just like, I miss it. I'm like, oh, I wish there was more seasons. It's like, it's so good. There's tons of stuff like that I just love. But so in terms of soulful sex, that's sort of like how I titled it. But I know this is something that you're passionate to talk about, in terms of, like, sex being, you know, souls connecting with each other. And, you know, I'm quoting you here, you know, that you said, you know, it's souls connecting and it can really dismantle gender. And I wanted you to go into it a little bit more, because I definitely feel like sex is a spiritual experience. I mean, sometimes good, sometimes bad, right? But it's a spiritual experience, and it's, you know, I feel it can be healing, and it's definitely transcending. Even, like, you know, things like generational or ancestor stuff that can go on. But it can be very transcending. But I wanted to hear, like, what you mean by souls connecting and dismantling gender as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm thinking in terms of, like, the way that I like to have sex, like, it started with me, right? Like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the sex that is really pleasurable to me is when I am in deep connection with the person I am with, or I am in a state of being really in, trying to practice deep connection with myself. So in that space, it really doesn't feel like I'm connecting with a person as a woman or a person as a man. It feels like I'm connecting with that person and all that they have, like, that they hold within them. And that includes their soul. And so that transcends, for me, trying to fit into performing a role of a man or performing a role of a woman. I am there to be with you. I am there to connect with you. I am there to gain a shit ton of pleasure, right?
Yeah.
And it's how our bodies and our souls are intermingling, and not about the performance of gender, I guess, is what I'm saying. Because when I first started, like, not even thinking about sex, but when I was first like, I'm gonna go have sex, you know, like, I was very academic about it. Like, I watched porn and was like, okay, so, like, how do I, at the time, like, how do I give a blowjob, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, we've all done that. We've all Googled.
Exactly. To, like, try to figure it out. And I was so disconnected, I think, like, I gained some pleasure from it, but I was so just, like, it served a purpose for me, because I wanted to make sure that I could really play the role of someone who could give pleasure, and that was play the role of this really sexy woman, knew what she was doing, and I got this. I am going to make this man love me, and that was so performative and so disconnected from really the play that comes in sex and that natural exploration of another person, and not just trying to go through the motions or perform pleasure in order to, you know, be something that, again, go back to the default, like, be a default sexual being. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot of... I mean, you can almost tell when someone is just, it feels very transactional when someone is just there to perform a few moves and flip you over a certain way. And they think that's the position that, you know, all women want. And you know, and that's just, that's it. You know, it's like, it's like there is this point where is that attunement, and you can, you know, it's like you can feel when someone is like tuned into and listening to your body and they're not trying to reach a goal. Of course, like, you know, we all would like the big O possible, but there's a difference between, it's almost like, to me, like the less there's pressure in reaching the climax, the faster I'm actually probably going to get there. It's like, I can tell when someone is just there to like, it feels that transactional. It feels like, oh, you know, she needs, oh, let's make her come, let's make her orgasm, and, you know, and it has to go. They don't even have to say it. You can feel the tension, and it's very uncomfortable. And it's almost like, it's like an energetical disconnect or aggression. I mean, you can really shut a body down just by having this pressure on someone else, I feel.
Oh, absolutely. It's like goal-oriented sex.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Like, let's get to the end game. And like, we're missing all the pleasure that comes, you know, that from the in-between, like the journey is really where the pleasure happens. Like your orgasm, I mean, depending on how long you're having it, can be like the shorter moment of the actual sex. So why not enjoy all of it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, there was, I'm trying to think, there was a thing that you said that you wanted to mention later on, and I'm trying to think what it was, because I've got a feeling it was around this conversation.
It was, and I can't remember. It was something around like default body, like
maybe, you know, like, or being able to walk around naked in front of your partner, nothing that people say. Oh, it's like the most pleasure we have is like when we're comfortable with our body, and those are usually the best partners as well, because they don't care if their belly's hanging out or do you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's like, was it around that?
Yeah, well, I mean, we can definitely go there too, because I think that's again, like, that transcends so much, because when we are, and I'm not talking about like this perfected, like, I don't care what you think of my body, because there's always going to be some sort of hiccups, you know, with that. But when you feel comfortable and seen by who you're having sex with, it's a whole nother level. When I feel that, it feels like I am honestly like a teen again, like hanging out with my friends, joking around. Like there's such play there, and there's such love, and there's just freedom to move and just be. And I think we spend a lot of time trying to be something instead of just being. And so to have that in your sexual experience, I feel like is very liberating. It's been very liberating for me, and it doesn't happen all the time. I'm still practicing how to, you know, make that a regular part of my sex life. But when it is there, oh, it's so rich and so juicy. And it allows me to ebb and flow through my gender expansiveness, because I'm no longer trying to, you know, get down the perfect way of going down on my partner. You know, I'm not trying to be this like performative sex, you know, toys, kitten, whatever you want to call it. I'm just me. That in itself is sexy for me, and that's seen by who I'm having sex with. So, and I can ebb and flow through, you know, my more mask, you know, side, and my more femme side, and everything in between, because it's all me, and I can play with all of that within that space.
Yeah, I wrote like a couple of things down, and I'll start with the last one. It's like, you know, you were saying about, you know, just being me, that is sexy enough. Like, that is sexy. And it's like, it made me think of, like, you know, something that, you know, that, you know, obviously that I think, you know, not everyone is like that, but something that I've realized for a long time is that, to me, what sort of increases the arousal and increases the pleasure and the sensations is not because there's a hand touching me. It's like, it's the person behind it. It's like, it's because it's your hand, it's their hand. You know, it's like that. That's why it's like, oh my God, like that person who, you know, I'm turned on by their mind or their sense of humor, whatever it is, right? It's them, and I know they care for me and they respect me and they see me. That in and of itself is like, that's what increases, which is why I think sometimes I'm just bored of like solo play. Like, I'm like, I'm so lazy with myself. I'm like, this is my hand again. It's like, okay. So,
you know, I get it.
And like the other thing that I thought of when you were saying about not about being performative, it sort of made me think of, you know, when we're virgins and we are exploring with partner, and it's like, I remember those times still being so much fun, you know, and I know there was like, you know, dry humping and stuff, and it was just quite funny, right? But there was all this other, like,
dry humping back into our lives, please.
Listen, I'm happy for dry humping. I'm all for it. And it's like, you know, it's like, but the thing is, it's like, there's also this bit of like exploration, because it's like, there was a lot more touch. There was a lot more light touch or stronger touch. It was like exploration, and you got to find out. And I'm still finding out. Like, a lot of time I feel I'm very inexperienced, even though I talk about sex a lot, which is probably why, because I feel like there's so much to learn. But like, it's just like, oh my God, wow, that's fun, or that feels good, or that doesn't feel so good. It's like, but there was no goal because we were virgins. So we knew there wasn't going to be, I mean, there was, you know, there was climax, but it was very different. It wasn't like, it was almost like a surprise. It was like, oh. Oh, what happened there? <You know? laughs> And that is fun, you know, it should be fun. Mm-hmm.
I love that. You know? Yes.
Right? You mentioned about relationship anarchy, you know, with love. So maybe you kind of already answered that bit around decolonizing the way we love others. Mm-hmm. And there was something about relationship anarchy, which relationship anarchy I don't understand. So I would love to go into that. But is there anything before we go into that bit that you do you feel? Did we cover the decolonizing the way we love others? Or is that different?
I think that's like such a. We could go into that for hours, but I think okay. We covered like what we like. We went around like looking outside of the gender. Yes. I'm always down to talk about that some more, but I think in terms of what you're now asking, which now I'm blanking on because I got lost in the sauce of gender and decolonization again.
I was wondering like what you meant by relationship anarchy. Mm-hmm. And like, what is it that you are wanting to do or undo around it?
Yes. Okay. So with relationship anarchy, relationship anarchy can look different for anybody that identifies as a relationship anarchist. I used to identify as a relationship anarchist and still hold a lot of those practices in how I operate with my loved ones. So in relationship anarchy for me, it's about not holding my romantic partner as the penultimate like relationship. So my current partner, her needs and her like our relationship doesn't come before my friend, or it doesn't come before a relationship I have with like a relative. Like, they are all important, and there is enough of me that I can hold space for each one of those and myself, like in my life. And so we are not limited on love, but we are limited on in terms of like time. So I do look at that, but like how I hold that person and how I tend to the relationship isn't based off of whether or not you're my romantic partner.
Okay, so so is it sort of that you say like the anarchy part of it is that it kind of maybe sort of like breaks the idea that your romantic partner should be come before your friends or your family? Is that kind of like, is that idea that you are, that you're sort of breaking that, and it's like you have the same amount, there's enough love in you to go around for family, friends, romantic partner, but there may not be enough time? So
exactly. And like,
so how do you prioritize?
Yeah, how do I prioritize?
Yeah, because obviously there's a time that's in the world that we live in is finite. I mean, not in the 100 series, I like to say. And I'm supposed to be letting that go, but you know what I mean. Some of my friends have said, "Oh, she's gone to the other side." Okay, so, but because you know, in this realm, you know, time is time, finite, and stuff. So how do we then? We still have to prioritize. So how is that different in how you deal with sharing out time between your romantic partner and the other relationships that you have?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually start with like me, because I'm at the center of my world. Like we are, So what are the needs that I have? What are the desires that I have? Who can I get those from that has capacity to give them? And then what are the needs and desires of those people? And what do I have capacity to give? So in that way, I can start to kind of like shape how I like look at my day-to-day life, my week-to-week, my month-to-month. So in how mainstream society kind of like views romantic relationships, we kind of put all of the obligations of meeting our needs and desires on our partner. Or partners, if you're non-monogamous and whatever form. Like, they need to, you know, be our friend, be our parent, be our lover, be all of these things. That's a lot to put on someone. Like,
yeah, it's a whole village.
Yeah, it really does take a village. Whether you're a child or an adult, it takes a whole village to support someone. And so how am I interacting with my village on a day-to-day basis? And this continues to evolve. Like, there was a time where, like, I was really exhausted. And I think it was because I was putting a lot of energy into being at everything and showing up for everything. And it's like, bitch, you know you're tired. Just like go lay down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So now I find that there are, like, how I interact with my current partner, depends on like our energy levels. What's our flow, you know, like what times of day do like really work well for us? And then when it comes to my friends, like how am I giving them, I have to always check in with myself, like am I checking in with them and like touching base with them in the same way that I touch base with my romantic partner? Like, am I like telling them, hey, I love you? Am I sending them a little, you know, I love to serenade people. I'm serenading you like I am serenading my lover.
Yeah. You know, so because it's true, right? We don't tend to nurture our friendships in the same way, you know, in terms of like the daily contact or regular contact, however much contact, you know, is good for both individuals. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, because I think if we don't do that, you know, think about actually, oh, am I checking in? And then all of a sudden we go, why do I feel so isolated? And it's actually something that we've done to ourselves. Oh, I'm talking for me actually, but you know, that's something that I do to myself. And I realized that it doesn't take much. And like even now, for example, with this friend, you know, I thought about doing this you know, before. And I was like, why did I never like reach out to him and let him know? And so I reached out and I was like, you know, Monday to Friday, how do you feel about at 7 a.m. we both wake up? Well, no, but like 7 a.m., we basically say that we're going to do a meditation. And so now I have my alarm clock. Now I get up early. I have to put it on at 6:30, which it's early for me. And so I do because I know that energetically he's out, you know, in his home on the other side of London, doing the same thing. And then afterwards we check in and we say, hey, that's how it was for me, you know, and then we'd have a little morning chit chat. And it's like, it's a simple little thing that sort of like bonds you with someone that, you know, that you feel that you're very close to, but it gives that little extra, you know, and that's a platonic friend. It's not even like, it's not romantic. He's like a brother to me. But so it's that, you know, there's a little things that we can do. It makes a difference, especially now when all these lockdowns and stuff, you know, wherever you are in the world, it may be different for different people. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's such a beautiful practice.
No, we'll try.
I love that. Oh, that's wonderful. And you brought up like with the lockdown and just like, I'm not going to speak for everyone, but I've heard this time and time again, like people are so touch hungry right now. Like we need touch. And if, like, I think it's made us really reevaluate, like, who are we asking from touch from? Like, do you feel like you only should be getting it from, like, your romantic partner? Or can you, like, cuddle with a friend? Like is your way of touching people, like, based solely off of, first of all, like, what their gender is? And then also, like, what your relationship to them is. And I'm not talking about like pushing past consent again. Ask before, but like, are we limiting our capacity to love someone that we really want to be showing care for? Like, are we limiting that love based off of like, oh, that's my friend. I don't want to like hold her hand in public and like make her like, you know, like people like, like there's probably so many thoughts that come with that, you know, we don't need to limit ourselves like that.
No, and I think it's also like, you know, it's like different friends, different dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. So I used to work in events and promotions many years ago, and there was this job I was doing for months on end. It was like it's called John Lewis Store. It's like a really like middle class, upper class kind of like store you go in to buy, you know, anything from clothes to hi-fi. Like it's a nice store. And we had to promote these, I've done like printers, laptops, you name it. And there was a group of us and this friend, my friend of mine, Emily, we used to always, you know, trying to sneak out and like being naughty basically. and then we'd always, because the job was so boring, so we'd try and have as big of a laugh as possible. So we'd be joking around and messing around with people, but in a nice way, you know. It was like we were making people laugh. And like sometimes we'll just be like walking around the shopping floor, and this is like a nice store, and we'd just be holding hands, just going like, yeah, yeah. And we look like penguins because we have to wear a suit. So it's like white shirt and a black suit, pantsuit. So it just looked completely off and odd, you know, just going back 13 years, you know. But we thought it was really funny anyway. And we got away with it. So no one said anything. Probably people were too scared to say anything. They were like, what would they say? You know, but she's very touchy-feely, a little bit too much for me. Sometimes it's like, okay, stop. You know what I mean? Because we all have different, I'm like, I'm saturated now. Stop hugging me. But but her needs is, you know, she has a different need for it. So I'm just, I am looking at the time, and I just want to check, one, are you okay with time? We're not going to go on for too much longer, but are you okay with time?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, cool. So actually, when I look at the question, we actually covered all the questions apart from the path to Send Seed community.
Okay. Although,
yeah. So if you're happy with me to ask you that question, I'd love to ask you actually what got you onto this path. Because you mentioned also like, are you 28, you said?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so young to be so wise. I'm like, I'm 42. I'm 42. Do you know what I mean? I know it's chronological age, and that doesn't matter in the 100 series, but whatever. Okay,
I'm really gonna have to watch this show.
Oh my god, do. Okay, so although it may have a little bit, I gotta tell you, it's not exactly. It has kind of like. It's not exactly what we'd call like decolonized. I feel like it could be done slightly differently in certain aspects of it. But the storyline is really good. So it's not perfect.
Nothing is.
Exactly. but you know, there it is. So then let me ask you, I would love to hear like what got you onto this path of sensing community, because I mean you are, and I know age is like relative, but to me, like, you know, when you tell me what your chronological age is, you know, can I say this on the podcast, hold?
Oh yeah, go for it.
So like, you know, you're 28, and that's like, and I'm 42, so like to me, like I always feel like anyone in their 20s are like, you know, young, and it's like it's quite amazing that you've gained so much wisdom and you know, in that time, that short amount of time. And I think I feel also like, I always say like, you know, people who are born after us are always more evolved anyway. So, you know, I feel like I'm hitting that age where I'm going to get embarrassing for my younger friends. Like, I feel like I'm hitting that age. I'm going to say things that, I'm going to hit that age where eventually, like, it's almost like you hit that time where it's like, you are now, I'm like dated and like old school. And it's like everyone else is like more evolved. So, can you tell us, Goddess, like what got you onto this path, including like with Sensing Community?
I hope that your evolution continues, because I feel like it's still continuing and you can see it in the podcast. So I I'm gonna be the devil's advocate for that. But so what got me on the path of sin? Honestly, it was my own chronic pain. I was just holding on to so much pain in my low back. Like it was debilitating. And I was also so angry. I was angry and in pain. and it reached the point where I was like, this isn't it. This isn't the answer. What I've been doing isn't working. And I'm not sure why it's not working, because I was like, you know, involved in social justice and, you know, exercising and had like a very active like sex life. Like I say that in regards to like what we've been talking about today, and it just wasn't nourishing me anymore. I realized like as I started the journey, which I think I started when I was born, but when I started like really acknowledging that this was like a spiritual journey for me, all of these things flowed out of me that like were like, look, this is what you have been holding. And seeing all those things and still like it's still flowing, right? And it's I want to say like 8 years now, probably less or more, I don't know, but like it's still flowing, like that's what Sensing came from, was like, we don't have to hold this anymore. We can plant seeds of something completely different for ourselves and for our loved ones. And so Sensing Community was based off of my own healing journey, but then also that of my loved ones. Like they all, like it took a village. It really did take a village. And so the podcast is about that, like about the conversations we have, like my body and energy work, like all of my ancestors and all of my loved ones are there with me in the room. They're not like watching you, but they're there with me in the room, like cheering us on to get that healing.
Yeah. Yeah, because they do want us to do well and be happy, you know. I mean that it kind of like it's interesting because it makes you think a little bit, you know. Because when you hear about, you know, they're here in the room and I think sometimes people think, oh, are they here in the room? But then are they not with other people too? And I think sometimes it's not so much that, it's just that it's like saying, you know, God is everywhere and but it doesn't mean he can't. So he can be here, or he can be somewhere, you know, however the traditional way of people looking at God and religion, right? No one is saying, oh, he can be both in Greenland and in Australia, you know. It's a different concept. And I think, like, when I think so with, like, with ancestors being here, with energy being here, they're also in their, you know, I don't have the answer because I haven't consciously died and come back and I can write a book about it. But I feel like they're also, you know, because I feel like when we die, we go home. Like, I've always had that big, like, that sense inside of me that I don't want to die, but it's like I'm not afraid of dying. And it's like, I feel like we go home. And it's a weird concept in terms of, like, well, what does it then mean, you know, to be in this body? What is the meaning? And, you know, what about the universe is so big? Like, what about, you know, other lives out there? What does that mean? Would that then completely, you know, defragment everything? Like, it's not the word. But it would completely, like, take apart the way we see the world. If there's another life, another intelligent life that comes over and visit, or we get to see that, would that be, you know, what would that actually mean? Would it mean that anything that we believe in or how we perceive things is completely wrong? Like, it's really hard to know what is really life and reality, right? I mean, I know we have to, I know how to function in this world, and I understand I have to lock my door and I have to go out and get a job and earn money, all this stuff. Like, I get that. But it's like, you know, when you look at this, the bigger picture, what is it really? Like, what are we? Who are we?
Exactly.
And why are we so worried about things that don't matter, you know? Like, and why are we always arguing and fighting? You know, people are so angry, you know, on social media and stuff, instead of, like, just going human to human, you know, and just acknowledging each other.
It's easy to get stuck in, like, going through the motions of what we call our day-to-day life, and, like, being really, like, sucked into this, the systems, you know, like the quote-unquote ruling systems, you know, the systems of work and, like, culture, the systems of, like, goal-oriented, like, I have to reach a target, like, I have to get to this weight, or I have to, like, have, like, a child by here and, like, a partner by here, and, you know, like, it's really easy to get sucked into that, because that's what we have deemed to be life. And there's so much more to life. And so, again, it goes back to that being, like, how do we just, like, be? Like, how do we be? And how do we be with our village and as an individual? Because it doesn't mean completely, like, checking out of, like, you know, society. It doesn't have to mean that. But how are we just being with our loved ones?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, because it is, like, one is, like, you know, when we just are, it's like, you know, like a baby or a puppy, you know, or any animals, actually, they just are, and babies just are, like, they're not trying to impress you. I mean, you know, obviously, unless, you know, you are training them for dressage and jumping, they may want to try and impress you. But, like, you know, in the natural way, they just are. They don't come to us if they're not feeling our energy. They have their own personality too. They're not interested, maybe, you touching them straight away. But then once they trust you, they just are. They don't, there is none of that trending and politically correctness. They just are, and take everyone for face value for who they are. And I think when we just are, that's when we have the most power as well, because we're powerful, and we treat people in a much better way, and we can be in this world. And then there's the other side as well. It's like being careful not to be completely disconnected from, you know, what's going on in the world. Like, for me, I don't watch the news because it impacts me too much. I get too upset. So it's not because I don't care, it's just I feel too much. So, but it's like, but then I go to, you know, friends will tell me when the things I need to be catching up on, because they just know I don't watch the news, it's too much. So But it's like, you know, I'm also worried. I don't want to be overly disconnected either on what's going on in the world. And I actually am really interested, but I know that if I get overly invested, then it's not good for me. Then I'm not good for people around me. And then I'm not sure that it's actually part of my soul's purpose either. You know?
Absolutely. I get what you're saying, because I also do not watch the news, but I feel the effects of what's going on in the world. And I'm not just talking about like energetically, like if something happens, if there's like a mass shooting, or if a police officer murders someone, I hear about it. And like, and then, you know, act in whatever way I feel called to. But I do have mad respect for those who are like heavily involved in like politics, and like that is a certain energy that they're working with that like I do not have the spoons for, and I don't want to have the spoons for. If someone gave me those spoons, I would drop all of them and walk away.
Exactly. But you know, this is the interesting part, right? Which is that, you know, sometimes people feel, so let's say if someone is really, you know, working, you know, they're very politically involved in the social movement, right? Or whether they're really involved with something else. But let's take political social movement. Sometimes I feel like where the, and I'm generalizing here, obviously, but let's say like in the worst case scenario, someone who's a member of that movement, they may feel like just because someone else isn't active, or you know, like as vocal, let's say on social media or wherever it is, right? Because often people think that because it's on social media, if it's not there, it's not happening, like, which is, you know, again, it's a different conversation. But like, for example, we need, everyone has, this is my belief, right? So it's like, I think we all, there's a reason why we all here. We may not know consciously what it is, but like, you have a path, I have a path, we all have different paths, and we all need everybody's path. So by that, what I mean by that is that, let's say the bus driver, yeah, he may not be full-time in the political social movement, right? Because he's got bills to pay, and he's got a skill, which is driving. So let's say take the bus driver, right? And let's say that is what he's doing. The thing is, what people forget is like, that bus driver is also helping me going to work, helping the other member going to wherever it is they needed to go protest. When you go and buy, like, I need someone to build my house. I need someone to make sure the water is running. I need someone to make sure electricity is on. Everybody is involved in everything that we all are doing. Everyone thinks that we're not connected. And if we're not actively in something, we need people. Imagine if everyone was super active in political social movement, then who would be coming to the defense of the Sea World? Right? Who would come to the defense to the environment? And again, those things are also political, but I mean, they're not a social movement, right? Society is different. But like, we need all these different groups. We need people to be extremely into it, you know, as long as they keep, you know, an open mind. But it's like, we need people to be going out there and doing that work the same way that we need other people to go and save the planet, save the animals. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And all these people are facilitating. You know, if I go to the shop supermarket, well, it's feeding me. It's feeding everybody. So we all need them. So we can't all be doing the same thing. And I think sometimes that's where people are overly, almost become fundamental to this in their thinking, right? Is they forget that, well, we kind of all are part of it, whether we want to or not, right? It doesn't matter. It's like we all have, and the fact that we don't all agree is also a symbol to the fact that we actually do live still in some sort of democracy. If we were in a dictatorship, we would all our free will would be taken off of us. We wouldn't be able to say anything different, right? We wouldn't be able to have this conversation, you and I. We wouldn't be able to have other people disagree with us and talk on a different podcast and say something completely different, right? So that's the beauty of the world. We need nuances. The life lives in the gray, I feel.
The life does live in the gray. And even if we weren't like allowed to have the podcast, we would still be thinking it. We would still.
Exactly. Yeah.
Movements, you know, underground movements happening. And I appreciate what you're saying about like, we all do different things, and but are all connected. Because even though someone else is doing like, you know, going into the system, like going into politics and dismantling it or working with it, from there, you know, to affect change, like other people's work is no different. Like, my work is in embodiment and somatic abolitionism. So I'm working with the body and with the soul on, like, spiritual levels in order to dismantle systems as well. We need it all. We can't just have, people in just one section of it, because it's nuanced and it's all interconnected. Like, we can't, like, people, like, I don't want to get too much into, like, separation of church and state, but, like, we really cannot separate how we choose to create laws and agreements of how to treat each other from seeing each other's souls. We can't separate.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Thank you. Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, at the end of the day, I feel like all these different, let's say if we were to call them groups, you know, wherever your path is in life, you know, whether it is like driving the bus or, you know, having a farm or whatever it is that we do, at the end of the day, everybody's job, whether you realize it or not, it has the same goal, the survival of our species. Species, sorry, I couldn't say that word. The survival of our species.
Yes.
That's it. That's it. Everybody, actually, that's the intention. We may disagree or think that they're the enemy, but actually, if we, like you said, if we are seeing the soul, you know, that's why, like, I believe in humanism. I don't like to even say women's right over men's right. Like, I feel like it's all important, don't get me wrong, but I feel like we forget sometimes the human side of it. It's like everybody actually... Most people, unless you put like cereal in front, like cereal, you know, and then insert a bad word, there's a different situation. But like everybody in a way is there for the survival of the species. Species. I can't say that word. Of the human species. Because effectively, you know, saving the planet, that, like, you know, I believe in that. But we're not actually saving her. We're saving ourselves, because I believe the planet is going to survive us. I mean, she had Ice Age before. She's had dinosaurs have come and gone. Like, we're a blip in this. I she's going to survive us. It's just that we're not going to survive ourselves. And that's what it is really about. You know what I mean? Same with social justice. We want people to have the freedom to be able to just be without having the fear of just being.
Right.
Or who they are. Same with LGBTQ+. Like, you know, they want to have the freedom to be, not having to be scared for their life, or it being illegal to love how they love or be who they are. It's the survival of our species.
Right. And it's like, it's so, honestly, even those are interconnected, like, or like the rights, or like how we are impacting our environment is deeply involved with how we're impacting other people. Like, how we treat our water systems, that goes down to, like, those who are drinking the water.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so interconnected. And so if your heart is to, like, go and, fight the pipelines, and you're doing that for, like, Mother Earth, just know that you're not just doing it for Mother Earth.
You are
doing it for so many other people. And so how do you operate in your day-to-day life in acknowledging that and honoring the people, honoring the plants? It's so interconnected. It is. But we shouldn't have shame if, like, we're not heavily involved in all of it, because we can't be heavily involved.
Can't be, like, we would never sleep.
Yeah.
I mean, even that wouldn't be enough. And it's like, and like you said, like, you know, I think if we have the respect, just, you know, realizing that we're all human, right? So based on that, that should be enough of an explanation to have respect and love and all of that stuff. But the other, like you were saying about saving, you know, the pipelines and the water and all of that, it's like, I think there is something that there's something really deep in us that we know that, you know, I mean, it's even in, like, you know, religious books, you know, I think we come from, you know, we have soil. I don't know how he said it in English, but, you know, we come from the earth and we go back to earth. Saying in English.
I think it's like a Bible quote, like, from dust you are, from dust you return.
Yeah. And it's actually true in the sense that we all get recycled. right? So whether you get cremated or you get buried, you get recycled. And so what does that mean is that you are actually, our ancestors are that tree, are that plant. We are the aubergines. That sheep is us. We are all, that's what I believe means we're all one, because effectively we've all been recycled. That's it. You know what I mean? Like, we all ended, you know, and the dinosaurs down a few layers, they're now the fossil fuel, right? Everything gets recycled. And we are, what are we doing? We're inhaling that fossil fuel, right? When it comes out of the car. You know, I mean, someone who knows about mechanics may say I'm wrong. I don't know. But like, that's my understanding. I don't drive. So I have a personal driver. The bus is great. I've got tons of them. The bus drivers, the train drivers. It's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. So we are truly one. And I think that's when people don't realize that, or they forget it. That's when people get into these like enemy mentality, you know, you're either with us or against us, you know, all this kind of like really dualistic way of looking at the world. Yeah. And that's what scares me. I think it's all in the gray.
So in the gray. And the thing about the one is that's important, because when we hold beliefs that harm other people, it also harms us. And I think that's like what's missing is like I don't think that people fully understand the impact of like holding and supporting and like perpetuating these beliefs, is that like it comes back around to you too. We all have skin in this game. Yeah. And although the effects of it might be more blatant or more exercised on people who look different than you and have different lived experiences than you, it's affecting you too.
Oh, it is so true, because it's like, if you don't think a certain type of behavior is wrong because it's not happening to you, you can't complain when it's happening to you. You know, it's like, it really is like we can't be aware of everything or conscious of everything all the time. Because obviously I think we will literally implode. It will be too much to hold on to. But it really is, that's where judgment comes in. Like when you say, like, you know, if you think something awful about someone, I think, you know, when people, you know, we all gossip. I gossip too sometimes, you know, like I'm not that evolved. But it's like, it, you know, the thing is like, when we put that judgment on other people, we say, you know, oh, look at her, you know, that's not what I would say, but like, let's say an example, right? Like, oh, look at her, how many people she slept with. Oh, look at that. You know, women talk like that about other women, right? So the thing is, the reason why it's bad on the gossiper is because that also means that she's put herself onto, she cannot allow herself to be free with her sexuality. Mm-hmm. And also there's the other part of her, I think, that's resenting the fact that she's not letting herself be free. Mm-hmm. Hence why that's why we are one. Like, if what you say or think about someone else, you have to hold yourself now to that same standard.
Yeah. And that's really like, it puts you in a box. Who wants to be in a box?
We don't want to be in a box.
Tiny box. Yeah.
We need a penthouse. That's what we need.
Yes.
Penthouse. If I'm going to have a box, let it be a penthouse, please. Yes. Thank you. With a view to the ocean and like the forest behind me. So Goddess, this has been a very amazing, nurturing conversation to have with you. And thank you so much. And I would love to now move on to the finishing thoughts, which basically are the two same questions I ask all of my guests. Mm-hmm. And the first one is, what did you wish you'd realized or understood when you were 18?
I thought about this. This was the hardest question of the ones that you had. And I was like, oh, what do... every time it's like, you are right where you need to be. You don't need to hurry up and grow up. You don't need to be something to prove that you are worthy to other people. You are right where you need to be. Stop drinking all the alcohol. Come back to yourself. Embrace the play again. Embrace the play. Yeah, I think that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. That was really good, especially with the alcohol. That's really good. And then the second one is, what stuff do you not put up with anymore?
Yeah. Energy that's not mine. And, like, it's a continual practice, so I haven't perfected it. But, like, I'm just not... I really don't tolerate, like, having, like, energy put onto me, or being, like, staying in conversations or environments where, like, it's just not my vibe. Like, I will just leave.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely like that. And I also don't think that I engage in a lot of conversations where, like, the value or rights of people's lives are, like, at question. Like, I just, it's just not a conversation for me. Like,
yeah.
If someone else wants to have it, they can, but I'm not going to. Yeah,
because that's quite extreme, isn't it? And again, they're talking about themselves, really, because we are one. Mm-hmm. So, you know. Yeah. Okay, so Goddess, please tell us where we can find you and how can people work with you, and do you do online remote work as well?
Yes. Okay, so you can find us on Facebook and IG at Sunseed Community. We also have our website, sunseedcommunity.com. Please reach out to us there. I'm putting out workshops. I have an Inner Wisdom Keeper series and a couple of other different things. I'm working on the Tummy Time series where we do some massage work. And all these, partly because of COVID, actually a big part of COVID is, like, they can be done virtually. And so, yeah, please reach out to me. I am so excited to meet with y'all.
So there are things they can do, people can do virtually with you?
Mm-hmm. Yep, we can do that.
Okay, great. And what is the name of your podcast? Is it different to Sunseed?
No, it isn't. So you can just look us up on wherever podcasts are happening, at Sunseed Community Podcast. Perfect. Yeah.
Sunseed Community Podcast. Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much, Goddess. This was so much fun. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Angie.
And that's our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Please don't forget to rate, review, share it, subscribe it on iTunes, follow it on Spotify or whichever platform you listen from. However you show love is how you can support this show. Drop me your questions or suggestions for future episodes via the website at angie-s.com, or come and find me on Instagram at Tool for Dish It Podcast. See you next week. And until then,
use in health, inappropriately.